Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. We are continuing our visit with John Tonsic, a certified fraud examiner and, drumroll, professional magician. And John has a very unique background, not just beyond fraud and being a CPA, but spent quite a bit of time in a metropolitan wastewater district as an auditor. And so last episode, when John was with us, we talked about some shocking facts and things surrounding fraud and how prevalent it is and how easy it is for people to commit it and people being falling victim of it without even knowing until, you know, months, maybe even years, until after a lot of damage has been done. And so I asked John to stay on because one of the topics and one of the biggest areas where fraud can happen is in payroll. So if you're interested in learning more about this, I encourage you to go back to last week's episode and hear about the other fraud that can be committed. But John, just for those who, you know, didn't have the privilege of tuning in last episode, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into this, and then we'll launch into our talk about payroll.
Thank you, Suzanne. I'm a CPA and a certified fraud examiner. I refer to myself as a forensic accountant. And for the last 40 plus years, I've been helping people prevent, detect, and investigate fraud. I started out as an auditor for Coopers and Lybrand. I worked in the financial advisory services group of PricewaterhouseCoopers doing fraud type work. I was an internal auditor at Atlantic Richfield Company. I was there for 9 years. I managed the audit function for three of our five operating companies. And I spent 7+ years as the internal, I was the interim general auditor for Metropolitan Water District when I retired. And I had my own practice for about 10 years. And I was focused exclusively then on helping people prevent, detect, and investigate fraud.
Great. So one of the things that you shared with me, and, you know, because fraud can hit everybody, but one of the most staggering facts, was utilities are in the top. I'm going to just read this fact that you sent me. Utilities are in the top five industries with the highest median fraud-based losses. And we talked about there can be asset misappropriation, billing schemes, but one of the real big ones that we don't like to think about is in payroll. We might like to think, okay, you know, someone's going to try to clock more hours so they can get overtime and, you know, just, you know, basically gaming the system. But it goes a lot deeper than that, of just that individual maybe trying to take advantage of getting a little extra in their paycheck every week. And so, John, let's just do a deep dive right into that, into what public utilities or public sector, private sector, small contractor, service businesses, what everybody should be aware of as something they should be looking for as could they be a victim of payroll fraud? What are some of the, you know, red flags? And then what can they do about it to keep themselves safe? And I know we can get into that after, but you have a really fascinating story to share, and I'd like you to do that first, and then we can get into the nitty-gritty after. And so with that, take it away.
Thank you, Suzanne. This is actually one of my very favorite fraud stories. It's a chapter in a book that was published by the ACFE. I did this case probably 20 years ago, and I've told this story 1,000 times if I've told it once. It's probably generated more work for me than anything I've ever done, because you can talk about statistics all you want, but until you tell people a story, they don't seem to connect. And this story seems to connect. So this was a situation that involved a medium-sized publicly traded company in the agriculture field. They had been having cash flow problems, and so they brought in a new treasurer. He'd been in the job for about 2 months, and he was watching every penny that the company spent. And every time they ran the payroll, which was every 2 weeks, they spent $4 million, except for the last time when they spent $4.7 million. And he couldn't understand why it was so high. So he called his payroll manager. She'd been with the company for about 5 years. She was on a business trip in Chicago. And he said, "Hey, what's going on with the payroll?" She said, "I don't know, but I'll come back and find out." She cut her trip short. She was back in the office the next day, and $700,000 was back in the company's payroll bank account. She called the new treasurer and she said, "I found the problem, bank error." So the guy called me and said, "Did that make any sense?" And I said, "Where'd the money come from?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Why don't you call the bank and find out?" It turned out that it had been wire transferred from his payroll manager's personal checking account, $700,000. Needless to say, we had a little conversation, and after a few denials and no tears, oddly enough, this woman admitted to taking $1.2 million from her company's payroll system over the preceding 15 months. She signed a handwritten confession. She went to the bank that day and got a check, cashier's check for $500,000, and brought it back to us and said, "Look, this is all I took. No harm, no foul. I'll just go home." And I said, "Well, you're going to go home, but I'm going to keep looking. Did you take any more?" She said, "Absolutely not. This is everything." I said, "You know, if you took more, now would be a good time to tell me, because I'm pretty good at this and I'm going to find it." She said, "How long do you think it's going to take?" And I said, "Why don't you give me a couple of weeks?" And within a couple of weeks, I found another $700,000. So here's what she was doing. This company had 5 payroll systems in 5 years. Most of them were outsourced, ADP, paychecks, things like that. This was the first one they brought in-house. So she moved the payroll function from accounting to human resources, because nobody in human resources understood accounting. She got rid of the existing staff and brought in 2 people who knew nothing about payroll except what she told them. No segregation of duties at all. She had complete control over the payroll master file, which contains all the information about all of your employees, their rate of pay, names, addresses, social security numbers, bank account numbers. She had complete control over that. She could do whatever she wanted. She could initiate and delete transactions in the payroll system without getting anybody else involved. She could post the general ledger, not just the payroll accounts, but the entire general ledger. And she reconciled the payroll bank accounts. Complete control over this. Flashing major red flags. This was a 37-year-old woman who was making $80,000 a year at the time. And she was coming to work every day dressed to the nines. Designer clothes, Jimmy Choo shoes, jewelry. I mean, she looked fantastic. Her husband was going to college full-time. He did not work. She was paying his tuition. She had 3 small girls, 13, 10, and 8. All 3 were in private schools. She owned a new 5-bedroom home in the same neighborhood as her chief executive officer. She and her husband both drove new SUVs, and she had horses boarded at the local stable, 3. I don't know if you have horses or know anybody who does, but they're not cheap. She was just, you know, no way that she could do this on $80,000 a year. So what I did was, when she left, I knew I couldn't trust the payroll records, because she had complete control. So I went to what's called the ACH file, and that's the file that they use to send wire transfer instructions to the bank. It tells them who's going to get a paycheck, how much it's for, and where it's going. So what she would do is, she would go into the payroll master file, and she would reactivate terminated and retired employees. She would change their bank account number to hers and process what she described to the system as a bonus payment. Normally, it was $40,000 every 2 weeks. Once the transfer was made, she would go back to the payroll master file, change the account number back to what it was originally, and just delete the transaction from the payroll register. The payroll register didn't even add up across the bottom. It didn't cross-foot, as accountants say. The deposit would show up on her bank statement using the name of the employee she had used to steal the money. Now, this woman was making $80,000 a year, and by the time she got caught, she was taking $80,000 a month. And the only reason she got caught was because she got greedy and took $700,000 all at once. It's like that old joke about the six stages of drinking tequila. The last two are bulletproof and invisible. All the fraudsters seem to get there. The longer it goes on, the thefts have a tendency to increase in frequency and size, which is, in my experience, I've always said, once you get to about a year, you're often talking about $1 million. And she got there. She took $700,000 in 1 month, and it's the only thing that got her caught. So the company filed a civil suit against her, and they won a judgment for $1.9 million. And the way we got to the $1.9 million was I did an interview with her and her husband at a Denny's restaurant. And I'd never met her husband before. At this point, she thinks it's $1.2 million. I've already found another $700,000. So my colleague and I went to the Denny's, and we're sitting down in a booth, and she came in with her husband, whom I'd never met before. And they sat down, and I said, you know, I found another $700,000. And she said, nope, didn't do it. And she looked down in her lap and got quiet. Her husband, on the other hand, was not quiet. He said, I knew you guys were going to do this. You're going to blame her for stuff she didn't even do. I said, I have no reason to do that. I can show you the money going from the company's payroll account into your joint checking account. She took the money, and she looked up, looked at me, shook her head, and went right back to her lap. We probably sat there for half an hour in silence. I mean, you could cut the air with a knife. And every few minutes, she would look up, and I'd be staring right at her, and she'd go, nope, didn't do it. Finally, her husband couldn't stand it anymore, and he said, did you take the money? She said, yeah, I took it. He said, why didn't you say that half an hour ago? She said, I forgot. He said, you forgot about $700,000? He said, could you excuse us for a minute? And I said, sure. So the two of them walked outside of the Denny's restaurant, and I'm watching them through the window in the booth, and they were having a pretty animated conversation out there by the front entrance. And after a few minutes, they came in and sat down, and her husband looked at me and said, of course, you know about the property in Michigan. Now, I had looked everywhere in California where this happened, but I had no clue. So I said, of course, I know about the property in Michigan. He just told me, right? He said, we paid $400,000 for it, cash. He said, if we give you that, will that make this go away? And I said, well, I'm sure the company's going to take that, but this is not going to go away. You're still a little short. So the company won the judgment for $1.9 million, took everything she had, her house, her cars, her pension. She and her husband were moving out of this big five-bedroom home that, you know, they had moved into, and taking their meager possessions and packing them into a U-Haul trailer to go back east. And one of the neighbors noticed smoke coming out of the chimney. And it was a really hot summer day. So they thought, nobody's burning a fire in the fireplace. The house must be on fire. So they called the fire department, who found her burning records in the fireplace. Now, I had already taken the case to the DA, but they hadn't moved on her yet. And this prompted them to do it. So the DA investigator came out to the house while they're packing up the trailer, and he said, I'm not going to put the cuffs on you in front of your kids, but you have to come with me. So he walked her out to the black and white. He cuffed her and put her in. Her husband followed her out to the car, and he said, I'm taking the kids. I'm headed back east, and I'm filing for a divorce. And that was the last time she saw him and her first night in jail. The DA offered her a deal. 9 years for a first offense, stealing $1.9 million. She's thinking, I'm 37, I have three small kids. She did not want to go to jail. She said, not guilty. So the DA said, fine, if she's not going to take the deal, he said, I'm going for everything I can. Is there anything that you didn't see that you'd like to see, John? And I said, yeah, she wouldn't give me all of her bank statements. So he subpoenaed the bank. Now, I started looking at the statements, and what I found was I knew how much she had taken from the payroll system and I knew what she got paid. So I just started looking for deposits I didn't recognize. And I started seeing these checks or deposits for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. So the DA subpoenaed the detail from the bank, and here's what I found. Part of her job as payroll manager was to pay the payroll taxes for the federal government and all the states that this big corporation did business in. She would overpay the taxes by $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 intentionally. The refund checks would come back to her desk, made payable to the company. She'd just flip them over, endorse them to herself, and put them into her checking account. I found another $350,000 like this. I testified against her at her criminal trial, and she was sentenced to 15 years in prison. The irony is she served 9. The irony is that had she taken the deal, she'd have probably been out in 3 and kept an extra $350,000. This is not a small company. This was a very large organization compared to most of the people that we're talking about here. They had plenty of people. They had sophisticated employees. They had the biggest accounting firms auditing them in the known universe, big law firms. They should have known this, but they didn't see any of it. And she got away with it because people don't want to believe that somebody that they know and love and trust is going to do this to them. They just loved her. They thought she was great, which is what made them so angry and made them want to send her to jail. Wow. It's quite a story, isn't it?
But again, that gets back to what you were saying about know, like, and trust, is that's how it happens. That, you know, we don't want to think that we can't trust anybody. But at the same time, it goes to who's minding the store. And if you are a business owner, you want to believe that, you know, that person you've hired to handle it is trustworthy, but they may not be. And so getting back to what you discussed in the last episode, in this case, in this company, what are some of the things that they could have done? You know, you alluded to segmenting. And I'd like you to explain to the audience, you know, what you meant by that, and could segmenting have helped in this particular situation?
Absolutely, it could have. The two biggest deficiencies that I see in every fraud, and all of them have deficiencies in internal control, but the two that I see most frequently are duties that aren't segregated or segmented, as you said. And that's a situation where one person can initiate and complete a transaction without getting anyone else involved.
Like this, the payroll, she had full control of everything on the payroll from start to finish.
She did everything. There were nobody was looking over her shoulder. No one was there to prevent her from doing anything she wanted. And the few reviews that were taking place were very high level and superficial, and the people weren't paying attention to them. So they allowed this to go on. You know, and it's a natural tendency for human beings to fall into what I call the trust trap. In the absence of trust, there can be no fraud. I have to get you to trust me or I can't steal from you. Mm-hmm. But it's part of human nature to want to trust the people that we work with. Human society evolved on the basis of trust and cooperation. It's literally hard-coded into our DNA. Some have even suggested that our bodies secrete a hormone that makes us want to trust. It's called oxytocin. I'm not sure I buy that, but it's possible. But we do want to trust. And the thing is, we have to learn, as Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify. You know, don't rely exclusively on a relationship that you have with someone to protect you, because that's when things will go south very quickly.
Well, thank you, John. And thank you for sharing that story. That was interesting and shocking at the same time. And it's making me think, wow, could that be happening other places and they just don't know about it? And chances are it probably could be, maybe not to that extent of somebody being that, but again, you touched on it, is she got greedy. And it was the greed that got her caught. And so on that note, for those of you who are listening who may be thinking, oh gosh, I don't want to wind up like that company. I'm little. I can't afford to take $1.5 million hit. How can they learn more about fraud prevention from you, what you do, and some things that they should be looking for? Maybe there are some, you know, simple things that you can teach people to put into place that maybe they still might fall victim, but at least they're going to shore up and protect themselves and be more aware of those red flags.
That's probably the biggest key. That's the one that most people could do that would improve their circumstances immediately. You know, most of the time people don't call me until they suspect they have a problem, and they're almost always right. And it's almost always worse than they think it is initially. Being aware of the risk and understanding a few basic things about what you can look for and how you can protect yourself are critical. I speak to companies and organizations of all size about raising fraud awareness. How does it happen? Why does it happen? What kinds of things can they do to minimize their risk? You can't stop it. You can't eliminate it completely, but you can prevent a lot, and you can find it much faster when it does happen. And that minimizing your losses makes a big difference. So anybody who'd like to talk to me about it, I would be happy to do that. They can reach me through my website, www.tonsic.com. My email, john@tonsic.com, or my phone number, 213-716-0667. And I never charge anybody for an initial consultation.
Well, John, thank you. This has been enlightening and delightful and interesting. And I'm sure you've got a lot more stories to tell. And so maybe we'll be able to continue a dialogue offline, just because I like hearing true crime stories like this. And it's just, very, very, very interesting. And it's just, it's given me pause, really given me pause. And so thank you again for, you know, being on the show, sharing your wisdom, sharing your time with us. And for those of you listening, thank you for joining us. And until next time, keep it flowing. Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions, and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest, or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.